Welcome to Podcast Insider. I'm Mike Dell. I am the customer support manager at Berry Podcasting and also the co-host of this show. And this week I have Mackenzie Bennett. Mackenzie, tell everybody who you are and what you do, since we didn't do that a lot here in the last few episodes.
Right. So I am the marketing services coordinator, which is a fancy way of saying I'm just involved with anything not dev or tech support.
Yeah, exactly. You know, she kind of wears all the hats. We sort of all do around here, so that's kind of the way it works. We all pitch in where we have some skills and experience and all that good stuff. So anyway, what do you guys think of this new production thing we're doing with Blueberry Pro? That was pretty cool with the music. What'd you think, Mackenzie?
I liked it. I like kind of getting a more succinct episode that you can tell things were potentially moved around to when they would be better, or just make them a little more polished. I tend to listen to shows like that a little bit more. So
right. You know, as Todd and I were talking about, it's kind of nice to just be talent and not have to worry about, you know, worry about editing things out, which we really didn't do a whole lot of before. So this is a little more polished, and we'll definitely be making some changes to the format coming soon. You know, nothing drastic, but, you know, something a little bit different, and we're going to kind of tweak it as we go along. Yes, we'll start out with news. You found most of the news this week, so I'll let you lead on this.
I did. Okay. So the first one was about the Pulitzer Prize, and they added a new experimental category, and they definitely used the word experimental, meaning that we don't know if this is going to stick around, but the new category is called audio reporting, specifically nonfiction, because like they've had audiobooks in the past, but they've really seen the growth in reporters and even not reporters doing shows that are standing out.
Yeah, so that's like, you know, for you know, the newsy type podcasts and basic reports, maybe on, you know, single report on a bigger podcast or something like that, but you know, basically the same as what it would be for a radio reporter or a television reporter.
Yeah, I'm kind of assuming a big jump in true crime in the past few years was a draw behind this.
Yeah, well, it's very cool. And so if you want to put your name in the hat for a Pulitzer Prize, that's now available.
I mean, that seems like a pretty badass like thing to win. I would go for it. Yeah. And it's not exactly something you go for. That's more like something you're awarded after doing something really good.
Of course, but you know, you do good content and maybe somebody will put you in for it. Mm-hmm. So very cool, very cool. And Daniel J. Lewis over at My Podcast Reviews, in this case, also from the Audacity to Podcast, has come up with a really cool page over on My Podcast Reviews. It's podcast industry statistics. Now, how useful this is, it's up to you. But as of this recording, 802,788 podcasts are actively in the Apple Podcast Store. Now, that doesn't mean that all those shows are actively producing, but those are all the valid shows that are still, you know, or that are in there. So we just passed the 800,000 mark. What was that? A couple days ago.
Yeah, earlier this week. Today's the 12th. Take a look at this information. I think just to kind of get a grasp on what's going on in the podcasting industry and just kind of have it in the back of your mind, especially, you know, the new year coming up, just to know what you're talking about. But in general, if this type of information is just going to confuse you or you don't care about it or like going to make you worry, then don't bother. Yeah, but for the people that, you know, like to keep up on this type of information, you can always rely on Daniel to have some good info.
Yeah, Daniel's really into the geeky statistics and all that stuff. And you know, if you're into that, that is pretty awesome. And this thing updates reasonably fast, I guess. I don't know if it's in real time, but pretty darn close. It has lots of pretty graphs and wheels and all that good stuff.
Hey, so. If there is a pretty graph, I will actually attempt to understand the information. Without it, you can just count me out. So yeah. Good job.
Yeah, very good. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes over at podcastinsider.com. Yeah. And you found a couple of new apps.
I found out about two new ones, or at least relatively new ones. I don't know if they're new to me or just new to the industry, but one of them is called the Sparks app, and then the other is the Listen app. Going back to the Sparks one first, it's supposed to be helpful for learning so that you can kind of like take notes while you're listening for some specific type of podcast. I think it could be popular.
Yeah, if you're, you know, I know there's podcasts out there that attempt to teach you stuff, and that mm-hmm. might be good for that. But, you know, I can't imagine me driving down the road listening on this app and then trying to make notes and all that. Because most of the time when I listen to podcasts, I'm doing other things.
Same.
So, and you know.
That's not just us. That's
yeah, that's the industry. You know, and the thing about it is, you know, it's probably great if you're taking some sort of class, you know, via podcasting or some, you know, something else that you really do need to take notes on. It's another option out there to listen to podcasts. And then mm-hmm. you found the Listen app you mentioned.
The Listen one focuses on creating a community with the other people that are listening to the same show. Honestly, based on the website, kind of reminded me of a friendlier potential version of like Reddit, but in your app to talk about this show.
Okay, so it's
that makes like, sense yes. based on what you read.
Yeah, what I read, it's kind of, you know, you can set up fan club or, you know, mm-hmm. something, you know, where a bunch of fans of this particular podcast can listen to the app or listen to the podcast on the app and then interact with one another. You know, maybe not real time, but, you know, talk about, hey, this episode's great because of this, or that's wrong. And here's, you know, I can imagine the arguments and or conversations.
That's kind of what I was thinking as well, that this is a great place to build a community, but also
anywhere there's comments, there's arguments.
Yes. Thank you for taking the words out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Right. But anyway, check out those apps if you're interested. You know, everybody has their favorite podcast listening app. And, you know, these may not be a primary thing, but they might be good for, you know, specific shows or you know, for specific reasons. And nothing wrong with that.
Mike, what's your favorite app to listen?
I use Overcast. On iOS. Then for work-related stuff, I use Apple Podcasts.
Very smart.
So, you know, because I got to know what things look like in Apple and how it mm-hmm. all works, but I don't prefer that for my own listening. You know, I'll subscribe to people's podcast customers and whatever. If I'm trying to troubleshoot something, I'll do it in the Apple app. It's because that's what everybody wants to know about. But Overcast has a lot of features. They're pretty good. And Marco keeps up with everything over there. He's the developer.
I feel like that's kind of the most important part when picking an app is that it's regularly updated and working properly.
Yeah, and like I said, he adds new features as needed. And it's just a good all-around basic podcast app. You know, it may not do all the specialty stuff, but hey, don't need that all the time. All right, so best practice. Got a couple of them actually in here. Just one that we beat the dead horse, but we're going to do it a little more about not stopping over the holidays because this is coming up to the holidays. So, you know, yes, what a better time to talk about it. But the first thing is consistency. You'll notice that this show is pretty darn consistent now. We, you know, are out sometime Thursday and in certain cases on Friday morning, but we're out pretty much every Thursday sometime in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And we do that on purpose because people build you into their schedule. They, you know, like I know on Monday morning, I'm going to get a podcast from whatever, you know, in this case, in my case, you know, I listen to a lot of aviation shows and mm-hmm. a lot of them come out on Monday. So I know on Monday, I'm going to get two or three aviation shows that come out every Monday. And one of them is missing. I'm like, well, what happened to that guy? You know, yep. And you know, you don't want to miss out. You know, you keep it consistent. Now, if you don't have enough content to do a weekly, do it biweekly. Or do it four times a week if you got the content for that. You know, whatever. But try to be consistent. And in my own podcast, I have to say that I am the king of inconsistency. So You know, but for this one, we try to stay consistent.
Well, it's also like, if you're going to be doing something a certain amount of times a week, but you feel like you're getting burnt out, don't just, you know, post episodes whenever you finally got them done. Maybe just take a step back in general and cut back to one episode a week or two episodes a week or something like that, or one episode a month, whatever it is, as long as quality stays good, because that's my biggest issue. Is I will happily have them say, hey, we're skipping a week, we're replaying this episode, as opposed to putting out some subpar.
Right. And that's
thing instead.
Yeah, that's usually why I don't stay consistent, because I sometimes just don't have the content for it.
Yep.
Or I don't have the attitude for it. You mm-hmm. know? And so, you know, I just let everybody know that listens to my shows that, hey, it comes out when they're done.
Right. You get an episode when you get an episode. Right.
And you know, of course, I'm an advanced hobbyist. I'm not trying to make a living at this. You know, as far as my own podcasts, it's mm-hmm. It's just something I do because I enjoy it, and it also helps me professionally. And then don't stop during the holidays. We talked about that for a second, but, you know, pre-record if you have to, but keep the content coming over the holiday period. You know, the biggest growth period is from December 15th to January 15th. Every year we watch it every year. The consumption level on podcasts goes sky high during that time, and acquiring new listeners during the time where everybody's off work, everybody's traveling, or, you know, they get a new device, or they're staying at the in-laws house and wake up at 4 a.m. because they can't sleep and they're playing with their device. You never know. So you're going to mm-hmm. pick up people. So, you know, keep the content coming. And of course, if you need help staying consistent, you can always do that with Blueberry Pro Production over at blueberrypro.com. Blueberry specific stuff.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of that going on for sure.
Oh, yeah.
PowerPress is a big one, right?
Oh, yeah. PowerPress 8.1. It's the next version coming out soon. Don't know a date, but it's in testing now. I have a website there that I've broken a couple times, but I think it's all fixed now, and hopefully it'll be coming out soon. But what we did was we got rid of the simple mode.
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, the problem with simple mode, it was a good idea, but it wasn't, you know, in my opinion, it wasn't executed exactly right, because you could stay in simple mode.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first question us in support have to ask, are you in simple mode or are you in advanced mode? You know, in the settings, because the settings are different for each mode. So we really want you to switch to advanced. So,
and I feel like people would never know.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Well, I don't know, you know, and then you, yep. you know, that's what you get. And that's cool, but we're going to remove that obstacle. So what it is we're going into this thing called Getting Started. And it's going to be a menu in PowerPress, added to PowerPress, but it's also automatically going to fire up the first time you install the app or the plugin.
And AKA as you're getting started.
Exactly. And so the first time you go into the PowerPress settings, you're going to be in that getting started mode, and we're going to tell you, okay, you need to have this, you need to have that, you need to have this other thing. We'll, you know, have links and everything else how to do that. And then the next time you go in there, you'll be in the advanced mode where you can go in and tweak and add the you know, the extra stuff that you might want to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be a whole lot easier for us in support, and a whole bunch easier for you guys getting started.
And yeah, I think my biggest thing with it was when we were making this change from simple and advanced to getting started was we're only asking people for the critical required information here. Once we get this, then it goes down a different path of how do you continue with what you're trying to do, because we wanted to just give it like an even level playing field for everyone to start with the plugin.
Right. And we're going to do a webinar on this once it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll announce that when once it comes out, because we don't know when it'll come out, but soon.
Hopefully. Yeah, but that'll be a big one for sure.
Yeah, so we're going to do a webinar and explain how that works and some of the other new features that may or may not be included in that version. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're rapidly approaching 8.3 is going to be the big, you know, final of this UI update that we're doing on PowerPress. Slowly but surely. I saw a mock-up of 8.3 the other day. It was pretty awesome.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so Chrissy is doing that for us, UI expert,
which
we need. And as we'll talk about in support, that's a bunch of UI things. But our blogging team over at PowerPressPodcast.com currently, that's moving, just like this is moving. So
yes.
We'll let you know. But currently it's over there. We'll have a link to it. But they did an article about MP4 or M4A versus MP3.
And, yes.
How many podcasters are using either format and all that. So pretty interesting. Looks like right now it's 43% of all podcasts are MP3. 39% are M4A, which is Apple's AAC format. And then 14% are other, which usually means wrong or video.
Right.
You can't use waves. So
what does Apple want?
Apple doesn't really care, to be honest with you. The thing with MP3 is it is the most compatible with everything.
That's what I tell people when they ask.
Yeah, well, Spotify does not take MP3s natively, or does not take M4As natively. So what they have to do, like on other hosts, they transcode that M4A into an MP3. For Spotify, or Spotify does that themselves. Like, with our case, they do it themselves. So if you submit an M4A through Blueberry currently, and this is going to change, but currently it gets transcoded MP3 for Spotify. And, when they ingest it into their system, when we go pass through, we're going to do the conversion, I believe.
Okay.
I'm not positive, but it'll all work.
Yeah. It's going to work regardless.
But, it's better to start with MP3 is, this kind of the conclusion I came to reading the article and, just being around forever. That, using the most compatible format is generally the best way to go. M4A or AAC format files. Maybe if you, if you're a real stats geek and, can look at all the pretty things, charts and graphs, that M4A might be technically better, but not that much better. And
I really don't understand why someone would feel the need to use that format. I really don't.
There's a certain host out there that's free and very big currently that uses that format, so
yeah, but that's not a reason why to use it.
Yeah, but
if someone is not using We Shall Not Name Said Host, then why would you want to use that? True. Would that be the episode that you would output and then upload?
Well, a lot of people use GarageBand. It comes free on the Mac, and GarageBand, without tweaking anything, puts out an M4A. Now
but it also does an MP3.
Right, but you got to know to do that. And a lot of people just want to record and forget about it, which I understand. And like I said, technically the M4A might be a better format, if you look at all the geeky stuff, but back in the day of VCRs, I know I'm dating myself, but Betamax and VHS, Betamax was a superior tape, but VHS was the standard.
So yeah,
it went away. And that's the same thing with MP3 and M4A. M4A is probably technically better, but MP3 is the standard. And so why not stick with the standard, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to continue to tell people, and to have them look at the data and see the small percentage. If they think that it's necessary, send them that direction, telling them, well, you can do this. It's not as compatible with all the other podcasting systems out there, as well as grossly unnecessary.
Yeah, and it's just, why have it transcoded to get on Spotify when you don't have to? Just do it in MP3 and they'll take it as is. All right. So on the 26th of this month, we're going to have a special episode of this podcast. So next week will be a normal episode. Todd should be back, probably from Columbus, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And then the following week will be a special episode. You'll hear several voices that you haven't heard yet.
Yes.
And then back to normal the following episode. I believe that's on the 3rd?
Second.
Second, yeah. So we should have a normal episode on the 2nd. Don't know who the hosts will be, but I should be here. And speaking of holiday schedules.
Yes.
Yeah, we're not just like Apple. We're a lot smaller. Still named after a fruit. But
I know.
Anyway, the holiday schedule for us. You can't
tell. We're ready to go on vacation.
Yeah, we need a vacation bad. No, not really. It's. But anyway, so December 24th, we're going to do a half day. That's Christmas Eve. We're going to be 8 a.m. to noon, roughly. On the 25th, of course, we're going to be off. And on the 26th, back to normal.
I won't be here.
Some of us are taking vacation, some aren't.
Yes.
And then December 31st, we're going to be another half day. Be done at noon. This is all Eastern time, by the way, New York time. And then on January 1st, we're off. And January 2nd, back to normal. Mm-hmm. That's the theory anyway. Of course, you know, some of us in support tend to work at all odd hours and do things we're not supposed to do, but whatever.
Oh yeah, no, I for sure will end up working on things while I'm out, but it's all things that don't involve customers.
Yes.
It's all things that I will avoid the public and be able to get some kind of side pet projects done on my own.
All right, so that brings us to our interview for this week. Beth O'Connor. She's the executive director, I believe, of the Virginia Rural Health Association, the Rural Health Voice podcast. Todd interviewed her, and we'll play that next.
I want to welcome Beth O'Connor to the Podcast Insider, and Beth runs the Rural Health Voice podcast. And Beth, welcome to the Podcast Insider.
Hello, Todd.
I appreciate you spending some time with me this afternoon. And why don't you give everyone the 411, give them the introduction to know who you are.
Sure. So I am the executive director of the Virginia Rural Health Association, which is a statewide nonprofit advocacy organization working to improve health and health care for the 2.5 million people who call rural Virginia their home.
And, you know, I think you and I were talking about it just a little bit before we started the show of the challenges of living in rural America. And even where I'm hanging my hat in the evenings is truly considered rural America. So I'm sure there's a lot to talk about. And different parts of the country have their own challenges. And obviously you're facing those in Virginia as well. But what was the emphasis of starting the show to begin with? And when did it start?
Sure. So as an advocacy organization, obviously one of the things that we do is strive to communicate to people what the rural health issues are. You know, here's the situation, here's the money problems, here's the political problems, here's what you can do about it. And at the time, and so this is about 2.5 years ago, since we're a nonprofit organization, we have a board of directors. And at the time, my board president was a woman who is a self-described podcast junkie. And out of the blue one day, she looked at me and said, Beth, we should have a podcast. And I went, we should what? Because at that time, I had never proactively listened to a podcast. There's several podcasts that my husband listens to that, you know, he'd played in the car when we were on a road trip. But frankly, the podcasts he listens to are very boring. And so I thought podcasts were very boring. And I had absolutely no interest in starting a podcast. And so I'm looking at my board president going, why? But she was very enthusiastic about this. And so I was like, okay. And I'm just making stuff as I go. And I'm like, okay, so there's probably going to be some costs involved in starting the podcast. Yeah, I'm sure we're going to need some sort of, I don't know, equipment, maybe a microphone, some software, somebody's got to edit this stuff. You know, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm just throwing information out of my mouth to try to delay what she's talking me into. Mm-hmm. So why don't we do this? Why don't I write a grant to cover the startup cost of the podcast? And if we get the grant, then we can talk about it. Which would have been great if we hadn't actually gotten the grant. So I'm like, I get this acceptance letter. I'm like, now what do I do?
Right. So now I've got money coming. So now I have to commit.
Right. Now I have to spend it. And so fortunately, one of the things that I wrote into that grant application was I wrote in all of the expenses to attend the podcast movement. Last year was in Philadelphia. And so I had, you know, hotel and registration fees and all that sort of stuff covered within the grant. So I went to podcast movement and met a whole bunch of really amazing people, including the folks at the Blueberry Table, and went, oh, not all podcasts are boring. Some of these are really cool. And I got really excited about it and decided that, yes, indeed, this is something that I'm actually going to make a real effort to happen and to do well.
You know, there are a number of boring podcasts out there, but I bet your husband's probably listened to like something super technical or something to that effect. Is that the case?
He loves them. He listens to these ones that they go into the nitty gritty of finance policy. Oh. And it's like, oh my goodness, make it stop.
And your brain explodes, right?
Yeah. So NPR's Marketplace, Kai Ryssdal's voice puts me to sleep.
NPR sound puts me to sleep. Well, yeah. Completely, you know, and I've always said the last. Every so, I want to be sound like NPR, and I say, no I don't. No. I don't need that smooth, silky sound of NPR. So then you are excited. You come back from Podcast Movement, and you get started. I'm sure then it's like, okay, how do we do this? What do we cover? Who do we talk to? Putting that agenda together, yeah.
Right, and so you know. Part of what that we do as the Virginia Rural Health Association is we have an annual conference where we bring people together around the state to talk about various issues. And so for the first, I think, 12 episodes, all I did was interview the people who are going to be speaking at the event. It's like, hey, tell me more about this issue. Tell me more about that issue. So I had the first dozen somewhat episodes without even really having to go look for people, because I had people who had already agreed to talk about this topic anyway.
I find, and I haven't had a lot of exposure to folks that are doing, you're doing a really tight topic in a state that I'm sure there's plenty of people to talk to. But the question I have for you is, and how far in are you now? How many episodes?
So we just released our 25th episode. So we're a year in and 25 episodes. We're doing the first and third Friday of every month.
So can you take that out a couple of years? Do you have enough to talk about to last 2 years?
Oh, mercy. I cannot knock topics down fast enough. I've got this big, giant whiteboard in my office, and we'll put, like, my staff will come in and scribble something on the whiteboard. Oh, we need to do something on, you know, rural LGBT issues, or we need to do something about aging in place in rural America, or we need to talk about EMS issues in rural America. And topics go up on that whiteboard faster than I can knock them down.
So that definitely is not a problem, is finding the content.
Oh, no.
And I'm sure along with those topics, you'll be able to find the people, the right people to be able to talk to that, you know, especially when you think about the EMS situation, even the county that I live in, you know, the EMS ambulance services are available from one service for a certain time, and then it switches to another group during a certain time. And you're like, and then you pray that the 911 operator knows who to actually, which ambulance company to send to you.
Right.
You know, people in big cities don't have this issue, but there isn't 24/7 in rural America.
No, there's not. Not for a lot of stuff.
So this gives you a lot of opportunity then to talk to these folks and get their stories and get these issues out in ways that maybe would not be done in, let's say, a Senate or a House conference where they're coming in and talking about a topic. And usually those questions are pretty constrained depending on the political person that they're talking to. So this really gives you free rein to really break stuff down deep and get to the core, isn't it?
Right. And, you know, because most of the people that we're talking to, so, you know, going back to the EMS issue, you know, we work with the state Office of Emergency Medical Services. They're trying to get the message out about what they're doing. So their staff are more than happy to come be guests on the podcast to talk about their issues and how people can get involved.
Mm-hmm. And because you're an advocacy group, you're not actually a government agency per se. Is that correct?
Right.
So you're probably a nonprofit as well? Or
absolutely.
I got you. So this is a topic that we haven't covered on the show before, and maybe what I should ask you a little bit about was, where did you go to get the grant? Did you go to the state to get the grant, or where I don't even know how that process even works.
Yeah. So the timing was very lucky. Well, it wasn't when I was trying to avoid doing the podcast, but for the actual outcome, it was lucky. So we work under the umbrella of the National Rural Health Association, and NRHA annually puts out a call for grants to start up small projects. If you just need a little bit of money to kickstart something and get it moving the right direction, this is some branch where you're going to go get, a $500,000 or $1 million. But if you need $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, that's what you can put in for just to get the process off the ground.
I gotcha. And sometimes it's just enough to kickstart it, because basically once you have the equipment, really your ongoing cost is pretty low.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. So with this show so far, then you're at 25 episodes. What has been, how's the response been to people that are listening to it? What are you seeing for uptake on the content?
Sure. So being a membership-based organization, we were very fortunate that we had an existing email list of probably 1,500 people. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get the message out very quickly. Plus, again, at that annual conference, when we had that event last year, we had just launched the podcast. So we actually had a session at the conference on, this is how you download a podcast onto your phone.
Ah.
Obviously, if we're just talking about rural health in Virginia, it's very micro niche, but we're probably running right at 100 downloads per episode. And sometimes if it's like a more popular thing, it's more. So, for example, one time I had somebody from the National Association of Rural Health Clinics talking about their policy initiatives, and they put a link to the episode on their website as a resource for all rural health clinics nationwide. And so that's obviously had quite a few more downloads than the topics that are specific to rural Virginia.
I got you. Are you getting any political listeners? Are the people that control budgets, are they starting to listen, or do you think
definitely? Yeah, so we work, I don't know about the people who control budgets, but the people who put in requests to the people who control budgets. So certainly our state office of rural health has been guests on the program, listened to the program, have made suggestions for topics to cover on the program. We interviewed, I think at this point, one state senator, several policy people at the federal level, but had quite a few influential people either on the show or otherwise contributing to the show. The Virginia Secretary of Veterans Affairs was a guest not too long ago.
And sometimes those folks have fantastic intentions and they're even budget constrained. So I'm sure that while people are complaining, why don't we have this level of service? Oftentimes, maybe even those directors are also frustrated that they can't provide it because of budgets. Are you finding some of that? And I'm just kind of curious, what kind of stories are you getting out of these folks?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Everybody needs resources. There's no question about that. But I think even before resources for rural America, rural Virginia, people are more looking for others to understand why they need the resources. This is what the problem is. This is why we're battling in this area. This is what the resources would do, and it's why it's so important. I think just the base message, things in America have gotten very political. There's a lot of finger pointing as to whose fault it is for what. Mm-hmm. And rural America, if you haven't noticed, has been a scapegoat for a whole lot that's gone on the last couple of years.
That's true. And I think, too, what we find is, having, just moved from essentially metropolis, I guess we'll use it that way, a big city, and then moving to rural America and having been away for literally 35 years. It just, I'm sometimes sit, I'm shocked sometimes that we aren't further along than we, it's almost like nothing changed since we left. Mm-hmm. you know, yep. And there's the same complaints that I keep hearing about the local hospital and about the local healthcare and about the local services. And it's the same thing, but 35 years later, and I'm just like, come on, we got to be doing better than this. So you're basically putting out great content and providing a resource. What is the type of feedback you're getting from the people that are listening to the content?
So the feedback we've gotten, for the most part, people love the show. We've definitely got, you know, again, as Navisco organization, a good Facebook and Twitter following where we put episodes out. We'll get people comment on that they really like, you know, this guest or this topic, or they've got an idea for another guest or another topic. So the response has been quite good.
Do you then address, if someone asks you to cover a certain topic from your audience, have you considered that as well, or is it mostly from your staff?
Sure. If someone's got a good idea, I am happy to run with that.
And then, so now, do you do all the production yourself in-house? You do all the editing, or are you able to have that outsourced at all? Or
yeah, so I refuse to touch the audio editing. It was not my problem. I think that was goal number one when I was thinking about funding, was how do I not touch the audio? Because that is not my deal. So I was able to contract with somebody in town that went through the university's communications department to do that for us.
Well, that's nice. So you could actually hire locally, yes. Keep that money locally. That's good.
We like small town money, staying in small towns.
That's right. We do. So with the show, Annie, I think what you've accomplished here is something that a lot of nonprofits look at. You know, and I know that there's a number of folks out there that are doing, it's not only nonprofits that are doing podcasts, but it's also groups that are, I guess, for better words, people of color who's have maybe a suppressed voice, or certain segmentation groups that are not being heard through local media, whatever it may be. I mentioned this to a group recently. I was in Dragon Con, and I went to a diversity panel, and sometimes it's just best to sit in the back and keep your mouth shut and listen. And, you know, we often hear about people talking about how the message of a certain, let's say, political organization, let's say the conservatives, saying they're being quote unquote censored. So say what you will about that, but you often don't hear about diversity groups, people of color. You don't hear about people that are activists that are also saying we're being censored. And while you're doing content that wouldn't maybe fall into that category that would be considered like super political or super activism type things, what those folks are finding in those groups is that podcasting is basically giving them the ability to have a voice and not go through by having their own website, having their own content on the website, and then linking to it from social media. They have less chance of that media being driven off the page, and they're finding good success in getting their message out. So did your organization find that you are having challenges getting the message out, and your directors doing this podcast think this was going to be a new way to do that? Or was this just another angle, another opportunity to get in people's ears?
So we weren't really having any challenges in terms of the message being suppressed. It's just more of a making sure people were aware of the information that we had.
Right.
I think that our board of directors went along with it just because our president was so excited about it. They went, well, okay, sure. We'll try that and see what happens. But it's just another way for people to engage with the Virginia Rural Health Association and learn about what we've got to offer and what we're concerned about and how they can plug into the process. You talked about some other groups. I had the opportunity at the most recent podcast movement to be part of a panel titled Podcasting with Purpose. And so I was up there, you know, talking about, you know, we've got a podcast with rural health issues. One woman has a podcast on gender issues. One woman had a podcast on race issues. And one woman has a podcast on women in the military. So these are all people using that podcast platform to talk about things that don't get discussed, you know, in our typical media outlets.
That's
things
right.
that are either they have you know, less of an interest to the general public, or that message gets squashed for whatever reason, things that, that people want to learn about if they just have the opportunity to do so.
And a lot of those are definitely micro audiences, but in itself, they're big. They're big audiences.
Yes.
You know, and whereas the, you know, the, in the news organizations where it may not be, you know, super a leading story to go in and talk about one of those topics, but at least then those in that community that are interested in that message can sit down and listen to 30, 45 minutes of content each week or how often it comes out about the specific topic that's basically directly affects them. I think that's truly, now if you think about podcasting and the ability that we have here, you know, in 2004, you know, in order to get content like this out, you had to go through lots of process and gatekeepers, and now there's no more gatekeepers. We can cover this content and provide a message. I think that's why podcasting remains so exciting.
Sure. I mean, when you think about, you know, rural Virginia, health in rural Virginia is, again, very, very niche topic. The stories about that are not going to be picked up by a major media outlet unless there's something wrong. You know, if there's a problem, that, you know, the opioid crisis has gotten a lot of media attention.
Right.
But from the other angle, you know, 2.5 million people call rural Virginia their home.
That's right.
Not a small batch of people there.
No, it's not. It's not small at all. And you know, folks that are not living in rural America don't often realize the, and I think this is super valuable because, and I think hope others that are in different states and stuff that are thinking about doing some content like this may take up the battle cry here because, you know, I think some people like to read, some people like to listen, some people like to watch, and podcasting gives you that ability for people to listen and get, you know, get informed about what's going on. And like you said, get the, find out what resources are available. Has this seen an increase then of utilization of your guys' services?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that we do with the podcast is every episode, I end with some sort of hook. You know, hey, we've got this event coming up. Here's how you register. Hey, we've got an opportunity to contact our senators. Here's how you do that. Some way to let people get involved themselves.
And then, so then from that action, you do probably see then a little bump, and it may not be a lot, but it's more than maybe, it's people that may have not ever gotten exposure to begin with.
Yep. Especially since I think when you see something like Virginia Rural Health Association, there tends to be an assumption of, you know, we're only for doctors or hospitals or clinics. We're not for, you know, the person who's doing transportation for their grandma because she can't get herself to the clinic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, rural health affects everybody in our rural communities.
And I think, too, is, you know, we've seen over the years, I think this has been well publicized about, you know, the near impossibility of getting doctors into rural America and how now people have to travel to at least a major metropolitan area to get some sort of medical services. Do you guys cover telehealth and all that?
Oh, yes. We've had, I think, one or two episodes at this point on telehealth, plus an issue on broadband because you can't have telehealth unless you have high-speed broadband.
Yeah, and that's a big problem. And it's, you know, because it's oftentimes required to have some sort of video to be able to see the ailment or the issue, or, you know, you can talk
and
through some of it.
That better be high definition.
That's right. And be able to talk through that on the phone. And not only with that, but it goes along all the other technical issues with, you know, with HEPA and all that. So, yeah, it's interesting that you...
This is not a Skype application.
right. So from a, you know, I think that a lot of people think about Virginia and they don't think of Virginia as being this big rural community. Oftentimes West Virginia gets that kind of, gets that reputation a little bit. But, you know, I used to live in Southern Maryland and went across the bridge oftentimes into Virginia. And while Virginia has major cities, it is quite a rural state in the scheme of things.
Yeah, very much so. You know, people tend to think of Virginia as being, either the DC suburbs or the whole Richmond Hampton Roads area where the population and the military bases and all that stuff is. But once you get past those, there's a whole bunch of wide open spaces. A lot of people don't realize how wide Virginia is. You know, we think of it being an East Coast state, but that West End, the very tip of Western Virginia is actually west of Detroit, Michigan.
That's right.
It's a huge state.
And it bumps right up against Ohio. Yeah, absolutely. It's it is kind of shaped kind of funny too. So
it, people yes, it don't. Is. Yeah, thank you, don't. Civil War.
So I think, you know, do you have advice for, you know, someone that's working in a nonprofit and thinking about doing this? Does the, you know, was the grant process worth it? Because, you know, you and I were kind of chuckling before we started the interview today that grant writing is an art in itself. How much time did you spend on the grant that you wrote for the podcast?
Well, fortunately, since it was, you know, through our umbrella organization, they make it very easy on it. So I, on this particular grant, I probably didn't spend, you know, more than a full day working on it, you know, maybe 5-6 hours, as opposed to, you know, some of our big federal grants where we can easily spend 2 months working on a project. But, you know, like you said, there's not a whole lot of upfront costs with podcasts. You know, once you have a halfway decent microphone, then you, that's 10 steps in the right direction. So if people are looking at this, if they're affiliated with a nonprofit, you know, somebody's going to have some seed money for, you know, startup or communications or something. I think a podcast would be very attractive to many of your funding entities.
What do you think, you know, if I'm just kind of curious here, what did you write the total amount of the grant for?
I think, so the max you can ask for is 5,000. I think I asked for 4,500.
So probably 1,500 or so of that was probably ate up in going to Podcast Movement with hotel and stuff. So that left you quite a little bit of money left then to buy equipment and editing services. So do you,
and are you my Blueberry subscription?
Right, that's right. So yeah. do you get to renew that? Are you going to go out and renew that grant, or is the association or is your group going to absorb the rest of the ongoing cost?
So the grant is a one time only. It's strictly for startup costs. But we were able to secure a sponsor. Our State Office of Rural Health, which is a division of the Virginia Department of Health, decided that this was an excellent project and that, you know, the things that we were doing and saying needed to be out there. And so they're underwriting our costs every year.
That's nice. So that's
lovely.
Yeah. So that reduces the pain points of having to go out and look for more money.
Right.
And does some of that actually go towards subsidizing salary, or is it just for the process itself?
It's just for the process itself. I've got big grants that cover my salary, so it's not really an issue.
That's again, I don't work in the nonprofit space. I don't understand how any of that works. You know, because I remember some of the government guys I've talked to in the past, they said, oh yeah, I have to count for every hour for every project so they know what to bill it to. And I'm like, wow.
Yep.
So what has it done for you then? So, at this point, you're now a convert, you are a podcast fan, but doing the podcast, has it opened any doors for you? How's the effect been?
Yeah. So a few things, you know, one, it's been very interesting. Once you start digging into podcasts, I never proactively listened to a podcast before. You know, now not only do I have my own podcast, but I've been a guest on, I think a dozen, maybe other podcasts of people wanting to interview me for various reasons, whether it's looking at rural health issues or whether it's looking at podcast stuff or you know, general things. So that's been very interesting. I'd say it's also allowed me to really dig deeper with some of these topics where, you know, maybe before I just had a surface knowledge of the various issues, but having that one-on-one time with that key expert to ask some probing questions has been really nice.
Has those conversations resulted then in new initiatives at your organization where you figured out there was a need and something like we need to address this, we need to look at this deeper?
Hmm. had to think about that one more. I'm not off the top of my head. I'm not sure. But it's definitely opened doors to continued conversation.
Gotcha. Well, I tell you, this is very fascinating to me from a content aspect, because oftentimes content creators are, you know, build a big audience, big group. But what you're really trying to do with, you still want to build a bigger audience, but what you're really trying to do is get a focus message to a focus group of people in a focus demographic. And it's truly kind of the true definition of a niche show. But yet, I'm sure that there are topics that you cover that not are just Virginia topics or Virginia concerns. It probably goes nationwide. So I'm just wondering how much of this then can be reutilized by other states and other organizations to say, yeah, this is good source material for the same problem we're seeing here.
Right. So many of the issues in rural Virginia are dictated through policy decisions in Washington, D.C. So it doesn't matter if you're in rural Virginia or rural Michigan mm-hmm. or rural Hawaii, you've got the same basic problem. It may look a little different. You know, what plays out in rural Virginia is not going to play out the same way in rural New Mexico.
Right.
But the underlying regulations and funding and all those other things that either support or detract from the program still exist.
Yeah, I can say it's basically, it still all rolls up to the Fed. They, as much as states have autonomy, when the cash comes from the feds, everyone has to play by the rules. Yeah. So,
well, and not even the cash, the people don't realize sometimes just the regulation hoops that our healthcare providers have to jump through. All of that, a lot of times, is dictated through Medicaid and Medicare. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's through the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy or some other federal entity whose staff may or may not ever seen anything outside the D.C. Beltway.
And believe me, if they haven't seen anything outside the D.C. Beltway, oh my gosh, I don't even want to go any further in that comment because...
Right. It's safer that way.
It's safe. Well, Beth, thanks for sharing. Where can folks find your show? And if they wanted to reach out to you, what's the best contact?
So I would go to our website, which is vrha.org. You click the podcast button, you get all the podcast episodes. If you click the contact button, you can find me.
I want to thank you for your time and tell us about your podcast. Definitely a unique story where I'm finding I'm getting lots of unique stories in podcasting. And it amazes me the breadth of content and how people are using podcasts to advance all types of topics. But again, thanks for being on Podcast Insider.
Great. Thanks, Todd.
And we're back. Let's get on to support. As I was talking about before with PowerPress, we're doing a UI update. PowerPress. And then the next thing on the list is UI and bug fixes on the podcast publisher system at Blueberry, otherwise known internally as Generator. But our system is a little bit different than what one might expect. So I'm just going to kind of break down what different parts of your Blueberry quote unquote account is. And what the different things in there can be. So an account at Blueberry is just the login to your Blueberry dashboard. It's how you know, get in, you know, that's just your access to it. You can have show listings there. You can just be a listener and have a login account. You can have paid or free stats accounts or stats subscriptions. We try not to say the word account when we say stats. It's a stats subscription. You can have hosting plans for the show listings, but the gist of it is the overall account is just your login, and then each show has a listing. So if you have one show, you just have that one listing, and that listing can have all kinds of, you know, different things tied to it through a thing we call the program keyword internally, and I think still on the website it says web-friendly title.
That might be right.
Yeah, but anyway, whatever it is, you've got this keyword that is associated with your show. And each keyword is for each show listing, but it also ties to the statistics. It ties to where the media files are stored on Blueberry. It can be your the first part of your free PowerPress site website. Your show listing can also have that quote-unquote keyword in there. And because it's tied to so many things, it can't be changed without starting completely over. And we get a lot of requests for this. You know, somebody will say, well, I rebranded my show and I want to change this keyword. And unfortunately, at this time, this is something we're going to tweak, I hope, that we can't change that because it's tied to your stats. It's tied to your hosting, you know, where the files are sitting, you know, what folder you're in, you know, and if we change that keyword, you're going to lose access to your stats, you know, from before, and you're going to have to move your files into the newly named folder and all that stuff. So it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a pain. So at this point we can't do it, you know, yes, unfortunately.
It is a pain.
And you know, the good thing about it is most everybody that would see anything to do with your show at Blueberry will not even notice that. I mean, when's the last time you looked up the URL in the address bar of your browser once you get to a web page? You don't see that.
No.
You know, it's I know it bugs a lot of people, and you know, a lot of people are OCD about their podcasts, and hey, why not, you know? But I get it, but you know, at this point, we cannot change that keyword. And then the directory at Blueberry is very similar to Apple and Stitcher and all the places. It's also powered by the RSS feed. Now, that's if you're not publishing right at Blueberry with our publisher system, because that directly populates the directory. But anybody that has an external feed, so if you're using PowerPress, even if you're hosting with us, your directory listing at Blueberry is powered from your WordPress site's RSS feed. So same goes with us. If you publish an episode, it can be up to 24 hours before it populates at Blueberry. Now, we are working on changing that as well with WebSub, which I think we talked about last week. If not, we'll talk about it next week. Mm-hmm. But, you know, eventually we're going to have it so it instantly updates at Blueberry. So if you're using PowerPress, whether or not you're hosting with us. So it's kind of cool. But just know that, you know, your directory listing, and if you're in the dashboard, the manage episodes, is only going to show what's in the directory. That does not mean that that last episode you published isn't out there. It comes from your website and goes to all those places, and including the Blueberry directory. Now, you can go and enforce that if you want. You go to directory listing settings, in the dashboard, and then just hit save and update, and it'll pull your feed. All right, that was way too geeky, and hopefully we'll make it a lot easier in the coming few months. Any parting shots there, Mackenzie?
Be patient during the holidays.
Yeah.
For your RSS feed, for your customer support, for your family, for everything.
Yeah, it's a stressful time of the year for some of us, and some
yes.
of us it's less stressful. And so everybody have a good week. We'll be back next week with a normal episode. Following week, a special episode. Looking forward to 2020.